Bruce Turnbull, October 6th, 1988. I'd like to thank you for giving us this opportunity to talk to you and share some of your memories with us. And I'd like to start by asking you if you can tell me about your family's arrival in Northville.
Well, that's quite a story in itself. How far back do you want me to start? Let me start back to the days of Scotland, or how far back do you want me to start?
Why don't you start with around the time that they came to Northville? Where were they before they came to Northville?
All right. My father was born in Delhi, Ontario, and went to Pontiac, Michigan to work. My mother was born in Tilbury, Ontario, and she went to Pontiac. They lived with her father and mother, moved from Tilbury to Pontiac. They both went to the Baptist Church in Pontiac, and they met there in church and started dating, and eventually they became married. They moved to Eagle Harbor and had a daughter named Marion, which was my sister. And then in 1918, while my father was doing a wiring job in Northville, and he came over by streetcar from Pontiac, and he liked the village of Northville very well, and he went back to Pontiac and asked his boss if he could moved to Northville permanently. He found a store here in Northville on Main Street that he liked, and so he came back and purchased the store and went in business himself in 1919.
Pretty cool. And then how long after your family moved to Northville were you born?
My father had an electrical store on East Main Street. It's right where the gas station is at the present time on Main Street. And a year later, I was born on Main Street up over the electrical store. In those days, when you did your business downstairs and you had your quarters upstairs for a living. So in 1919, when the little store came along and dropped me off in Northville on Main Street, and we have been living here ever since.
The gas station that you're referring to that's there now is one of between Wing and Center.
The gas station is right across from Mags, between Mags and the parking lot. It's a pure gas station.
So it's the first block off of Center Street.
First block off of Center Street.
What are the first things that you can remember about growing up in
Probably the first thing that I can remember is a pond, which was down, we lived on 222 Fairbrook, and the house was still there on 222 Fairbrook. Probably the first thing I remembered is a beautiful lake, or they call it a pond, right across the street from the house, and I remember going down there to the pond and my father taking the green canoe and taking us for paddles on the canoe. And it used to be what they would call Lover's Lane. All the lovers in Northville used to walk down on the dike of the pond out to where the dam was and sit there and look at the water. I think that's the first thing I remember. The second thing I would remember would be going to kindergarten in Northville High School, or Northville Grade School, and my teacher was a teacher named Mrs. Taylor. And I mean, like all the other little boys of that age, first thing you rapidly fall in love with your kindergarten teacher. And I know one day that I was always a great one to have an imagination. And I came up to school one day and I told Mrs. Taylor that a bear followed me to school right up Wing Street and right up Katy Street, and the bear was out behind the tree right now, that big old black bear. And I was petrified, and she kept saying, "Well, Bruce, no way is there any bears around Northville. There have been in the past, but not now. And I said, yes, Mrs. Taylor, there is a bear out there, and he's waiting for me when I go home. And I don't know if I want to go home from kindergarten. So finally, she went out with me, and I showed her the tree where the bear was, and I said, well, I guess the bear has run away. So I think those are the first two things that I can remember of the early days of North. If you wanted to go a little bit farther, the next thing I would remember would be my first grade teacher, a teacher named Mrs. Fritz. And she had a little doll, and she would throw a little Raggedy Ann doll. And she would throw the doll up in the air, and all the little children would stand around, and those who could catch the doll could sit with the doll all day. And there was quite a fight to see who could sit with the doll. So silly little things to do, but she would get the children's attention. I imagine that's the first two or three things that I can remember as a little boy in Northville.
When you were canoeing on the pond, that was before you moved out there, you still lived over the store? Or how old were you when you moved?
All right. We lived in the store for a couple of years, and then from Main Street, we moved over onto First Street. There's a brand new home being built on First Street by a man named Mr. Johnson. And Mr. Johnson built the home on First Street, so we moved from Main Street to First Street when I was approximately 2 years of age. At the age of 4 years of age, we moved to 222 Fairbrook. And it was rather interesting because the man who had the place before we bought it used to grow ginseng. And ginseng has to be grown in the shade. And so our whole backyard was all shade, and we had about a half an acre of land there. I think the land is still there, the lot is still there. But the whole lot was covered with these boards like they would use for lath and plaster, those little lath boards. And the whole three-quarters of an acre of the backyard was covered with these little lattice, and they were built up about 6 feet off the ground, and the man was growing ginseng there. So I remember as a little boy that when we took over the land, there's no more ginseng to grow, so my father piled these boards up, and we could walk from one end of the lot to the other, about 6 feet high of these boards all the way to the back of the lot. We stayed there. My mother stayed there right up until I went through high school and through college, and I went into the service. And then when I came back out of the service, my mother still lived there until about 1965. And she sold the home. I lived there until later on I got married and moved away.
The other thing you mentioned in that first comment was about the dam, which was into that pond. Where exactly would that dam have been located?
All right. When you come down Hines Parkway Drive from Asher's gas station, you go east towards Sheldon Road, and halfway between Sheldon Road and Asher's gas station, you'll see a big hump of dirt on either side of 7 Mile Road. That is where the dike was. So the dike was right across the road there. Of course, when they put the road in, they put they bulldozed right down there. But that was where the dike was, and the dam was right by the creek going up toward the cemetery. And the water would back up so much that you could paddle the canoe all the way up to the fish hatchery, which now we know that is where the tennis courts are up on 7 Mile Road. But was a high bridge going over into Rural Hill Cemetery. And the reason for that high bridge was that the water was within about 6 feet of the top of that bridge. And that's the reason that bridge is so high there. Ordinarily, they wouldn't put up a bridge that high. But you'll see all the way along there, the dike is still there. After you cross over the bridge, well, you can still see the dike up into the cemetery.
You talked about your school, and...
Excuse me, do you want a little bit more about that dam, or...
Sure.
Okay, just one quick little story. They used to call it Balboa Lake. That was the name of that lake. And in the early days, during a flood, the dam was washed away. And Henry Ford, as a gift for Northville, came back and built a new dam across the creek. And over a period of time, it took him all summer long for his men to build the new dam there. They got the dam all completed, and the first week after they were completed and moved away, we heard a tremendous explosion one night. And what some of the workmen had done, they had come back with dynamite, and they tossed the dynamite into the water, and the fish came up by the bushel baskets full. They went out there in canoes and gathered in all the fish, which wasn't too bad, but it wasn't the right thing to do. But the biggest problem was they made a little crack in the new dam. And if anybody knows that any time you get a crack in a dam, even though it's just a little sliver, it's just a matter of time before that dam will go out again. So in about 3 years, the dam opened up to about 18 inches wide, and out went the water, and there's never been a pond ever since.
So when the dam went, the pond just disappeared altogether?
Well, when you have a crack in the dam, the water just runs right out like a flood. It goes out, and then there's no more.
So it ran down the river?
Right down the river, and also slipped a few houses away down farther by the racetracks.
Well, before the original dam was built, was water though?
Right? There was a natural going dam. Way back, I don't know how far you want me to go back here, Diane, but at one time, the reason they built the pond there originally was for a mill, so they could run the mill. And that was back in the days of Mr. Ambler. In fact, they call that Ambler's Pond, and they also call that, for the Fairbrook Street, it was called another name. I think it was called Pond, or it might have been Ambler Avenue. And then at that time also, there was a lot of things going on right around the pond. That was right where our first brick factory was, at the end of the pond. And also, it was Mr. Rogers' first condensed milk factory right there on the corner of Rogers Street and Fairbrook. In fact, that's why they call it Rogers Street, and Tom Rogers' first factory where he had condensed milk. Right.
The Ambler Mill was also located in that same general area?
The Ambler Mill was there. As I understand it, Mr. Ambler was the one who built the pond originally to turn his mill to do his grinding of his corn and grist and so forth.
So as far as you understand it, prior to his time, that was ground?
I would say prior to his time is as far as the Rouge River.
Is there anything else you'd like to say about the pond?
Well, there's one other little thing that's kind of interesting to me. When we were in high school, we were about 14 years of age. And so a friend of mine named John Springer, who has now passed away, he and I thought, well, we don't have a pond anymore to swim in, so we'll make our own pond. So we worked for about a month and got sandbags and dammed up the creek. And we did a pretty good job because we had about 8 or 10 or 12 feet of water there right in the bend of the river. So we had our own private pond. So pretty soon some of the other boys in the neighborhood, they came down and started using our swimming pool, which was all right with us. But then we had another little fringe benefits that we didn't realize because girls started coming down to swim in our pond also. And always about 40 feet across and about 12 feet deep, and it is a nice place to swim. And one of the British little girls came down the street in a Japanese bathrobe with her girlfriend, and her girlfriend was named Pearl Willis. Her name now is Pearl Willis Parmeter. And so these two girls came down and started swimming in our private pool. And I thought this one girl was really cute, especially with a pretty little bathroom. And her name was Rita Springer. And at the present time, she's Rita Turnbull, my wife.
Let's talk some more then about your growing up years and the kind of things you remember from school. One of the first things I'd like to ask you about that is, you mentioned your kindergarten teacher and your first grade teacher. Which school was that? Where did you first attend?
The school was right on, right off Katy Street, and it was facing east. Right, there's a, you've seen the pictures of the schools in Markville. The grade school was facing east, and the high school is where it is at the present time, what they call the old high school. The high school is still there, but the grade school is burnt down.
And the building that was the high school that you're talking about is no longer used, but the high school is the one that's old building.
That's right, it's used for children of having problems, and it's run by Garden City School System. But it's still a good school. In fact, as I remember, that school was built for $75,000. You can't even build a home now for $75,000, but that school was built for $75,000. It's a very well-built school, and at one time they were going to bulldoze it down. I'm glad they didn't, because it's well-built and it's well worth preserving.
Is the building that's standing now the school that you attended for high school?
Pardon me?
Did you attend this building for,
yes,
for high school?
We went to high school. Rita and I both went to high school in the present time, what was the old high school, yes.
Do you
facing King Street.
Do you remember either of the fire that destroyed the grade school? Or
I remember the fire in 1936 when our grade school burned down. I went up through that fire, put my boots on and my raincoat on, and it was in the middle of the night, like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And being only a block away from the school, I went up there, and with tears in my eyes, watched a beautiful school burn.
But you don't remember the high school fire that was before?
Well, the high school fire was many years before that. I'm not exactly in the date, but it seemed like to me it was in the early 20s is when the original high school burned, which is on the corner of Main Street.
So by the time you remember this building that's here now, it was already built.
Right. When the school burnt down, there was a big problem, because here was a whole high school, school for children, and no place for them to go. So a lot of the people opened up their homes, and the first grade would be in one home, the second grade would be in another home. And also, they built a portable Quonset hut out in the playground, and they used that also for many years, or for a long time for school, and then later on it was a Boy Scout hall. And a fellow named Mr. Owen, who had a clothing store in Northville, he was a Boy Scout leader at that time, and so eventually the building was turned over to the Boy Scouts. And then later on, when the Scouts got their own building, which is down where the corner bank is, on Dunlap Street, the drive-in bank, that's where the Boy Scout Hall was. Well, then they tore that building down. And later on, the Boy Scout Hall was moved over on Katy Street next to the post office. That building was supposed to be built with the people's money of Northville for a Boy Scout Hall. At the present time, the city of Northville are renting it out to other companies, but actually that building, as far as I know, is owned by the people of Northville, because they donated money for it.
Do you have any other childhood memories, things that happened when you were growing up?
Yes, one real vivid one. When I was in the sixth grade, I had a teacher named Ida B. Cook. And I thought she was a very mean lady, because she had a habit of making her students study. And I didn't like to study. I'd rather play sports. But she and I didn't get along very well. In fact, she didn't like me, and I didn't like her either. But anyhow, I thought, well, I can stand her for a year for my sixth grade, and she probably thought, well, I can stand this fellow for sixth grade, but boy, will I be glad to get rid of him. And so we finally got out of the sixth grade and went into the seventh grade, and lo and behold, she was promoted to the principal of the seventh and eighth grade. So here we go again. So sixth grade, and then seventh grade, and then eighth grade with Ida B. Cook. Well, about this time, I figured that I couldn't conquer her, and she couldn't conquer me, so we had a compromise. So we became the best of friends. And as far as I know, she was the best teacher and the finest teacher, and one of the best that Northville ever had. In fact, later on, they named the school after.
What is the location of the school?
Well, the Ida B. Cook School is up on Taft Road. It is now used for the senior citizens. Of course, they still have a lot of things going on there all the while. And temporarily, the school is in mothballs, so as Northville increases in size, they'll start using it for a school again.
You mentioned that when you first met Ida Cook, you had problems because you enjoyed sports. What kind of sports?
Well, in Northville, in the early days, they had baseball, basketball, and football for the boys. The girls had girls basketball, and they had girls softball. But we had no swimming pool, so there wasn't swimming. Northville did have a golf team, too. So there was golf, baseball, basketball, and football. And Northville always had excellent sports teams, and the biggest competition was Plymouth. I would say right now, as far as the biggest competition for Northville, is both Plymouth and Novi. In the early days, there was no high school in Novi, so all of these students from Novi who graduated out of grade school, they all came to Northville, which was real good for Northville, because I would say about 10 to 15%, maybe 20% of the teams were made up from the athletes from Novi.
Were you on several of the teams?
I played baseball, basketball, and football, and golf. I was on the golf team. In fact, I even ran on the track team. So,
but you were very
good. Well, basketball was my best sport. We won league championship when I was a junior. We were league champions as a senior. We won the district and the regional. The district and the runners up in the regional in both years, junior and senior. So we had good sports teams. Incidentally, it's kind of interesting. I was thinking about this the other day. In the early days, there was no buses up north. All everybody to get to school, they would walk to school, which still might not be a bad idea. Or have the parents pool and bring students into school. But anyhow, that's another matter. When there's a basketball game, are we running short on time? When there's a basketball game, what the coach would do, he would line up about three drivers who were very good drivers and very safe drivers, and the team would we'd meet up at the school, and the team would get in those two or three cars, and then we would start out, especially for a tournament game. In the tournament days, we would go to Eastern Michigan over at Ypsilanti, and it was quite unusual. All the parents would line their cars up behind the team, and they would be lined up for about a mile all the way between here and Ypsilanti, and it was like a snake. And if we won, well, everybody would blow their horns coming home. If we lost, well, of course, it was kind of quiet. But there's a lot of interest in sports. Of course, this is the days before television, so sports were the big thing in Northville.
What can you remember about Northville itself, the community, in these years that we've talked about so far, like the downtown area and the businesses?
Okay, just one more thing on school, if you touch on that,
okay.
When you get away from school, and then I'll tell about that. When we got into high school, Ida B. Cook, again, was our class sponsor of our senior class, and to tie in with your question, what do I remember? The biggest thing in those days in Northville for a boy or a girl in Northville was the Northville Wayne County Fair. The Wayne County Fair was down towards the Northville Down racetracks are at the present time. And I think practically everybody in Northville kept looking forward, especially the youth of Northville, looking forward to the 5 days in the fall, usually in September or early October, which when the Northville Fair was going to be. And this was a real big fair, the only fair larger in this whole area was a state fair. And they would take over the whole area, and all of us who lived in Northville, we would be there the day before the fair started, when they brought all the animals in, the pigs and the chickens and the horses and the ducks and the cows and the sheep and the pigs, and then we would go to the state, we would go to the Northville Wayne County Fair for 5 days, day and night, from about 8 o'clock in the morning until about 10 or 11 o'clock at night, when they had fireworks every night. And then when the 5 days were over, we would go down on a Sunday and watch them load up all the horses, and then take them away. And I think probably everybody in Northville who was my age or older, I certainly remember the Northville Wayne County Fair. That was the big thing of Northville.
I know that the fair was during the 30s, but do you remember approximately when they started having them on the
spectrum? The Downs actually, where the racetrack are, it started in the early 20s. I would say around 1925 was when they started the Wayne County Fair. I might be wrong on that date, but that's pretty close to it. And they continued on up into the 30s. Because in 1942, when World War II started, well then, there was no fair at that time, as I remember, because everything was for the war effort. And right after the war in 1945, when the Northville Downs took over, was the first mutual racetrack in the state of Michigan.
Okay. Now, you set up the fair? You told them enough about the fair?
I think so, except they would bring in large crowds. I have one little thing about the fair, if you want me to bring this in. You have to remember, these were during the Depression days, and nobody had any money, and they were trying to get more and more people to come to the fair. So this one year, they advertised in the paper, the Northville Record, if anybody would like to get married at the fair, they would give the couple a brand new Ford automobile. This brand new Ford automobile would be approximately worth about $700. Well, $700 back in the 30s was an awful lot of money. So, consequently, they ran an ad in the paper, and there were many young couples who decided they want to get married at the Northville Balance, at our Northville Fair, during the fair. So, we selected a couple named Don Starr and his wife, and Don was rather a short man, and his wife was a little bit taller than me, about 4 or 5 or 6 inches taller than Don was. So anyhow, they got married at night in front of the grandstand, and that really brought in hundreds and thousands of people, which is rather unusual. To everybody were invited to go to the wedding. So during the wedding, there, like all the chorus girls, they always had a real nice vaudeville show along with their. But at the time, the night of the wedding, they played the wedding march, and Don Starr and his new wife to be came up on the platform. All the chorus girls are in beautiful gowns with feathers, and they open up their feathers, and they had a big pink hat on top, they had pink feathers, and they stood like a big wall around the couple, and the minister came by and pronounced them man and wife, and they had the Ford automobile, a nice black one. Of course, all the Fords were black, all cars were black. I was wearing colors like they are now, and after they got married, they got in their new Ford automobile and drove away, and their honeymoon lodge was the Log Cabin on River Street, and the Log Cabin is still there. And as far as I know, it's the only Log Cabin building in Northville at the present time. It's owned by Northville Downs. But if you're down on River Street, you'll still see the Log Cabin, and that was Don and his wedding party. Excuse
me. Okay, now we were going to talk a little bit about what you remember of the town.
All right, early days of Northville, I remember a lot of early days. Probably my first recollection of Northville was during the Depression, when we, at Christmas time, everybody was so poor that to help out the Exchange Club of Northville, which now is defunct, there's no more Exchange Club of Northville. The Exchange Club is a group of men similar to the Rotary Club, except Exchange Club met in the Methodist Church for their noonday luncheons. Well, anyhow, they went out and gathered together and bought goodies for the children of Northville during the Depression. And they would make a little bag, and in that bag there would be an apple and some nuts and a few pieces of candy. And then about a week before Christmas, down in the four corners of Northville, the kids would line up for over a block long, almost up from the corner of Sheldon and Main, almost up to City Hall, standing in line, sometimes almost freezing, waiting for a bag of candy. And then Santa Claus would come in and ring his bells and jingle his bells, and then the children would come up one at a time, get their free bag of candy. That really stands out in my mind very much.
And where did they do this? Did you say where they do it?
Where did they do it? Uh-huh. Santa Claus would come right on the corner of Sheldon and Main Street, or Center Street, and they would block off the roads, and they would get all candy right there. Also, the businessmen would have get more money. My father was in business in Northville. He owned the Northville Electric Shop. And of course, he was a businessman along with all the other businessmen who were trying to dig up more business. Also, Northville had a lot of dances. he would close off North Center Street between Main Street and Dunlap Street, and they put a band shell up there, and the bands would come in there, and they'd take some slippery things and put it on the pavement, and everybody would dance there. So I would say three or four times in the summer they would have a dance, and people used to bring people in by the thousands. They also had giveaways. They would, every time you go into a store and buy something, they would give you a ticket. And then the tickets, the night of the drawing, when they had the big dance, everybody would go in there and have a ticket and go from store to store, and all the stores had a free gift in their window. I remember one day that one night I went down there and I won myself a little rocking chair. And I went in and presented my ticket and I got the rocking chair. The businessmen also took over the North Hill Theater and gave free movies. And if you wanted to go to a movie and go to a store and buy something, and he would give you a ticket to go to the movies, because they tried to keep the movie theater open at that time. So North Hill was a booming town, even during the Depression. Another thing about the Depression, there was no money around, but the banks went closed, and everybody was broke. Mr. Ammerman and school teachers decided they would pay the teachers by scrip, which was just a piece of paper saying $5 or $10 worth of scrip. So when the teachers would come downtown, they would go into the store and they would say, "Do you accept scrip?" And the store would say yes or no. And if the store said yes, well, then they would spend, they would turn their scrip in and get $5 worth of groceries or $5 worth of commodities. And then later on, that scrip was turned back into cash, as I understand it, by the school board.
Can you tell me the names of some of the stores or some of the businessmen?
All right, Friedel's have been there in town all the while. Friedel's are still there. I can't remember Laffin's. It was Ponsford's before Laffin's. There was a drugstore on the corner named Dunzo, where Gennetti's are. That has always been a grocery store, way back from in the 1860, 1870. Later on, that store was owned by EMB, which is E.M. Bogart, and it was Bogart's father that Henry Ford gave a new Ford automobile to every year for free, and old Henry Ford didn't like the Ford dealer in Northville too much, so he went to South Lyons and bought the car and gave it to Mr. Bogart, which happened to be Mr. Henry Ford's cousin. And also, Mr. Henry Ford spent part of his honeymoon in Northville upon North Center Street, and it's right in the corner of Center Street and Walnut Street. At the present time, while they're remodeling the house and putting a new porch on it, it's on the east side of North Center Street, and I was always happy to see him improve that home, because that was the home that Henry Ford spent part of his honeymoon in. And then after EMB, I had the grocery store, then a fellow named Smith, they called him Smitty, here in Northville, was also the postmaster of Northville for many years. He owned the grocery store, and in those days, if you wanted groceries, you could call the grocery store and they would give you service right to your home, curb service. They would take your order over the phone and fill the order and put it in a truck and bring it right up to you. Later on, my Gennetti's took over the store as a grocery store, and then eventually my Gennetti's went into the Italian restaurant, which they have once in a while. It's called the Hole in the Wall.
You mentioned Henry Ford's honeymoon. That was before you were born, right?
That was quite a ways before I wanted to ask it.
How do you know about that? From other people in town?
Other people in town, and we've heard of it, yes, and, through the Bogarts.
Is the Bogart family still in town?
Some of the Bogarts are still around the area. I don't think there's any living right in North Lamell. Are there two Bogart boys that are still living?
Do you have any other memories of businessmen in the community or different stores?
All right. I got another item too of importance.
Okay.
Too, before we get into that.
Okay.
Another interesting thing was in the early days when the Northville School would come at their end of their June year, all the senior classes would go to Washington, D.C. And to go to Washington, D.C., they would, in Northville in those days, we had freight trains going through Northville and also passenger trains. So the day that the senior, well, stepping back a little farther, for your freshman, your sophomore, your junior, and your senior years, you worked very diligently trying to raise enough money so you could go to Washington, D.C. So every time you worked an hour, you got so much credit for it. And we had all kinds of ways of earning money. I know one year we tried to raise money by going out and picking apples. Friends, apple orchards around Northville, taking it down to Plymouth Harmeter Cider Mill and pressing the apples out. And then they would jug the cider for us, and they would charge us 75 cents for a jug. And we would, a jug of cider, and we would take that cider and deliver it to people's homes for a dollar. So we made 25 cents in every jug of cider. And we had a few hundred jugs of cider we delivered. That was one way we raised money. But anyhow, for your 4 years of school, you're trying to make enough money to go to Washington. And when you finally came the time to go to Washington, why, it seemed like to me the tickets were about $38.95. Round trip to Washington from Northville to Washington, D.C. and back, and that included 3 days in the hotel. But anyhow, the train would come into Northville and stop, and the fathers and mothers would take their children down to the depot, and the depot was right on the other side of where the spring is, which is not flowing at the present time. But anyhow, the depot was right there. We would bring their children down and they'd get on the train, and we always had two people from the school system go with us. Ida D. Cook was one that went with us, and a man named Mr. Johnson, who was our history teacher. So then we would go to Washington, D.C. for 3 days, take in all the sights in Washington, and come back. That was quite a sight to see all the kids leaving on the train and coming back by the train. And you take the train to Detroit, and then the train would hook up with the train to Washington, D.C., and then they'd go on from there. But we already started right from Northville and returned right to Northville.
When you raised money for the senior trip, did each person raise their own money, or did the class pool all the money so that everybody could?
What they would do, they would take the amount of money that they raised, and each person working would work, and they would keep track of how many hours that you worked. And then if you had $3,000, in our class of 1937 was when I graduated out of Northville High School, we had 54 students in our class, and out of the 54, there's about 42 of them went to Washington. Want to go to Washington. Some of the kids didn't want to go, or didn't have money to go, or didn't put in hours to work. So then they would take that 42 people and divide that in to the $2,000 or $3,000, and if you didn't have enough money, boy, then you would have to pay the difference in cash. There's a man named Mr. Van Hove in Northville who lived up on West Main Street, and he had a daughter in our class who has since passed away, named Betty Van Hove, Betty Van Hall and Mary Dayton Deal. And Dayton Deal lives up north right now. One day, my Betty came to me and she said, Bruce, you know of any students that would like to go to Washington? Does not have enough money to go. So I said, yes, I know about five. So her father reached in his pocket and he paid for those five students to go.
So your class actually didn't earn enough money to pay them?
No, some of us did. Myself, I did. I had enough hours in. But some of the students didn't have enough hours in and they didn't have any money to make up the difference. But Mr. Van Hoog, of his generosity, he paid for five students to go. Which is a big deal.
What did Mr. Van Hoog do? He must have been fairly well.
Mr. Van Hoog had a lot of different businesses. The last business he was in was making these, I don't know what they're called, contraptions when a person has had a severe operation and cannot go to the bathroom anymore. They have to go into a little bag. And he was in that business in Northville for many years, right? Used to be the Stewart, that used to be the drugstore, Dunn's drugstore right down below there. In fact, the little office is still there, the door is still there where he had his business there in Northville. And people used to write in from all over the country asking for him to mail them out, so many of those. Because anybody who's had an operation, it's a must. In fact, I was down to the Chamber of Commerce just recently, and they got a call from a person from Texas wanting to know if that place in Marfield was still there making these surgical things for him. And so I just happened to be in there, and I said, no, they're out of business. But Dayton Deal, the son-in-law, took over the business up to northern Michigan. So they called from Texas to northern Michigan to see if they could still fill the order.
Do you remember some of the larger industries in town?
I remember the Globe Furniture Factory in Northfield, where they made school furniture and school desks. In fact, if anybody goes to an antique show and see a desk with a globe on it, buy it, because that is a Globe Furniture desk made in Northfield, Michigan. And the globe is like the globe of the world. That was their insignia. In fact, I remember the Globe Furniture Factory. I remember when the Globe Furniture Factory burned. I can remember the Stinson Airplane Factory, where Mr. Stinson used to make the airplanes in Northville. He would manufacture them right down, all the factories right down near the railroad tracks, right across from where the spring is. Once they built the airplanes, they would take a little truck and they would pull them up Main Street and down Roger Street out to 7 Mile Road, and then they would go to 7 Mile Road down Beck Road, in the corner of Beck Road and 6 Mile Road, was where the Stinson airfield was. Northville had an airfield. And then once they got the airplane out there, minus its wing,